compared to the way the world does things. In the kingdom mindset, we give so that we can receive, not get so that we'll have. We love, forgive on the front end so that our lives can be blessed on the back end. And that's hard because when troubles happen or calamities happen or situations happen, we instinctively want to, out of our flesh, try to fix it or solve it. And we talked a little bit about that symbolic action that we do. And look at the person beside you and say, your life is all about symbolic action. It's all about it. You've got to get that in your spirit, or otherwise you'll wonder why I keep losing these battles, or why things just keep pouncing on me, and why things keep happening in my life that I don't want. Well, it's because we don't want to live in a symbolic type of life. We want to live in a here and now life. In fact, some of our greatest phrases are, well, if nobody knows about it, then it don't count. And if I don't get caught, or if I don't... But understand this, every thought, every word, every action that I have is a symbolic action of where my life is taking me. Whether I like it or not. It doesn't matter if anybody's around when you do it. It has symbolic power that is either putting you in bondage or is releasing you. God said it this way, Jesus did in the New Testament. He said, listen, whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven. And whatsoever you loose on earth is loose in heaven. And we like to think of that as praying. Oh God, I need you to heal me, so I'm binding it right now and I'm going to get healed. And to a certain degree, that's true. But it goes a lot deeper than just simply just asking and getting. It goes down to the very actions of my life. And the actions of my life are creating or not creating an atmosphere or where my future, the future I want. Now let me explain it this way. In marriages, since we just went through Valentine's, I always love Valentine's because, you know, everybody's got their book out and everybody's got the new system of how to, you know, make a love life and da-da-da-da-da. I'll make it real simple for you. Real simple. It's you won't have to even buy a book. It'll just save you all this money. It works like this. If you want somebody to love you, then you love them first. You want to write that down. That's right. If you want somebody to love you, then you love them first. That's all the stories and all the information, and they'll talk about it, and they'll say, oh, I was doing things for her when I didn't want to. And you loved her first. That's all you wanted to say, right? And by loving her first, that released her to love you. Or she loved him first, and by doing that, he loved her. It's symbolic action that God works through everything. Whatever I bind, I'm binding in heaven. And whatever I'm loosing in heaven. Now I want to show you this. And of course, we talked last week about Moses, you know, doing symbolic action. He raises his hands when they're fighting the other army, and Joshua's down below. And as long as he kept his hands up, what? They won. That's weird. One old man sitting up on top of a hill, but if he lowers his hands, what happens? No, that ain't real. Oh yeah, that's real. If he kept his hands up, you could just see him if he had kind of a warped sense of humor. What if I just put it halfway? It's kind of a stalemate. But the men standing around him knew it too, and his two closest people to him decided, we're going to fix this problem because it's getting to be a long war and he can't hold his arms up much longer. So they sat him down, propped his arms under rocks. So he just put his arms up on rocks, and so that's how he sat right there. But as long as those hands were up, they won. We talked about how Ezekiel or Elisha, at the end of his life, the king comes and he tells the king to beat the ground with the arrows and gets mad at him because he only hit the ground three times. He said, you should have hit the ground. But I mean, this guy's like, why am I even hitting the ground? It's symbolic action. He said, if you'd have hit the ground 8, 9, 10 times, you would have utterly destroyed your enemy. But now, you'll only whoop them 3 times. Just because I hit the ground 3 times? Symbolic action determined how many times they were going to win a war. And understand this, God does everything by this symbolic action. Let me see if I can give it to you this morning. I want to deal with this in a specific story and try to bring it to you so that it's just concrete in your mind. Go with me to the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah 32. And that's where we'll deal from today. Jeremiah chapter 32. And I'll show you how symbolic action can carry you through hundreds of years or 50 years or your whole life. Jeremiah is a prophet that has been called by God. But let's start at verse 14. I want to read one verse and then I got to catch you up. Thus said the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, take the evidence and take this evidence of the purchase, both which is sealed and this evidence which is open, and put them in an earthen vessel that they may continue, what? Many days. So what we're doing today is not even going to count until many, many days from now, but we're going to open it up and then it's going to count. But before we can understand what's going on here, I need to catch this story up. Go with me in your Bibles. Let's go back to 2 Kings, the 20th chapter. This story doesn't begin a chapter before this. In fact, this story begins almost 50 years before this. Almost 50 years, because this is about 625 or 600 B.C. But I want to carry you back to 714 B.C. Look at the person beside you and say, 714 B.C. Something happens in 714 B.C. Now you got to get the numbers right, because understand, when we're on this side of the calendar, everything goes... It doesn't go up. It ain't like 2010, 2011. It goes like 2011, 2010, 2000. It's going backwards. So we got to go back to 714 B.C. And there's a king whose name is Hezekiah. And Hezekiah is a mighty king. He's an awesome king. But he gets word that he's dying. God sends word and says, you're going to die. Hezekiah is so distressed, he puts his face to the wall and says, God, please, just give me a few good years. I just need a few more years to do the things I want to do. Please do this. And God stops Isaiah the prophet in the hall as he's leaving and says, go back and tell King Hezekiah he has 15 more years. And he does. And Hezekiah's excited and everything is good. At about this time, as Isaiah is not in the room and Hezekiah's excited about what God has just done, some people show up. And these people are not just normal people. Go with me to 2 Kings, and you're there, the 20th chapter and verse 12. And I'm not even going to pronounce that first guy's name, because if there's 12 of us up here, we're going to say it 12 different ways. We're going to say Barad. And at that time, Barad, the son of Baladam, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he had heard that Hezekiah had been what? So, he's got an ulterior motive here, you have to understand. He's not just checking on him because he's sick. We'll get to that in a little bit. Go to verse 13. And Hezekiah hearkened unto them and showed them all the house. Look at the person beside you and say, all the house. All of the house of his precious things, the silver and the gold and the spices and the precious ointment and all the house of his armor and all that was found in his treasures. There was nothing in his house nor in all his dominion that Hezekiah did not show them. In other words, he took them to the temple and he said, you know what, in the temple we've got drinking glasses, can't nobody drink out of, but I can show them to you. And the priests are the only ones that can use this. Look, in my house, I've got little storage places. Look at all this. I've got gold so much I don't even know where to put all of it. I got shields that were given by Solomon that, you know what, they're still on the wall. I mean, they're just big old plated golded shields. We don't even use them. They're just there for ornament. I mean, we are such a blessed country. We are such an awesome group and blessed. God has been so good to us. Next verse. Then came Isaiah, the prophet, unto the king Hezekiah, and said unto him, what said these men? And from whence came they unto thee? And Hezekiah said, they are come from a far country. Look at the person beside you and say, far country. Even from Babylon. And he said, what have they seen in thine house? And Hezekiah answered, "All the things that are in mine house have they seen. There is nothing among my treasures I have not showed them." And Isaiah said, "Now, this is bad." See, you want to hear the word of the Lord before you start your decision making. It's not good when you have said you've done something and somebody comes along and says, "Now let me tell you what God thinks about that." That's not always a good way to live life. It's a very bad way to live life. It's kind of like doing something, then going to your parents and trying to explain it. You know it's not going to work. You know they're not going to understand it. And it's the same way with Hezekiah. He's like, uh-oh. And Isaiah says, "Now, hear the word of the Lord." Verse 17. "Behold, the days come that all that is in thine house..." How much of his house? Not half, because he didn't show half. He didn't show them part, so they don't take part. He showed all. So how much are they coming to get? "All. All that is in thy house, and that which thy fathers have laid up in store unto this day, shall be carried unto..." Nothing shall be left. You didn't leave out nothing, and nothing shall be left. You don't understand it, Hezekiah, but you just did something, made a decision based on this presumption, that that is way off. That's far off, and it will never come back to hurt me. How many of us have made decisions in life, have said, "Look, I don't even know that person. I'll never see him again. So if something happens, it isn't like I got to deal with it. That's way off. They live in another state. They live way off." Or let's do it this way. As young people, we do this all the time. We say, "Look, that's like 20 years from now." Somebody will say, "Look, you don't need to be doing that, hon. You need to, you know, because it's going to affect you in your future." I mean, that's like forever. That this thing I'm doing right now, what I'm acting out, how I'm acting right now, is not going to affect my future. Oh yeah, it will. Everything affects. And God is the only one that understands how it all ties in together 50 years from now, or 60 years from now. I'll give it to you just point blank. When I was in high school, I struggled with that mindset that God told me, "Tim, keep yourself pure." And I had every friend, some of them even had kids by the time they were juniors in high school. I was carrying them around, had their kids in my car. And I'm thinking, "God, I don't want a kid. I mean, but you know, come on, now nobody's going to know. I mean, you built me this way, God. You made me like this. You're the one that crossed all my wires up. I can't help it. I like girls." God said, "Hold on, Tim. Hold on. Do what I'm telling you to do." And in my mind, I said, "I won't be getting married for another 10 years. I mean, it's like forever. I can make the mistake." Mistake. And then I could get my life right before I get serious to get married. I held true. I waited. Had no idea that the girl that was perfect for me lived 5 miles down the road. Had no idea that she went to my school and was 2 grades below me. Had no idea that I dated some of her best friends. Had no idea I'd be married to her for the rest of my life. Now imagine our relationship if I had finally ended up with her, but I'd done slept with 2 or 3 of her friends in my life. And she's got to trust me now for the rest of her life with somebody that she couldn't trust. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm telling you, God sees 50 years into your future. God sees when your kids are going to come out of teenage years. He understands all of that. And when He gives direction and gives purpose, He says, "Listen to me. I'm telling you, listen very carefully. I can see the end from the beginning. You can't. And you've got to listen to my words before you start to make decisions. Because if you use dumb ideas like, 'Well, that's way off,' or you use dumb ideas like, 'That'll never affect me,' or you use dumb ideas like, 'Well, what will it hurt?' I will tell you, the enemy is setting you up. It will cost you, and it will hurt you, and it will be something you'll pay for a lot longer than you'll want to pay." Now, Hezekiah had done it. It's done. Isaiah has done prophesying. All that did was get Isaiah killed. Later on, Isaiah prophesying that everything's going to go wrong, that we're going to go into bondage. Nobody likes a bad sermon, do we? I mean, come on, let's be honest. Nobody likes what I'm preaching right now. Nobody wants to hear, well, you see, I mean, what does he know? I mean, why can't you have fun and still, you know, we can always say I'm sorry later. No. You can say you're sorry and be forgiven, but it won't change the footprint you put in the ground. That's what the world doesn't grasp. That's what the church community doesn't grasp. Somehow we think, as long as I'm saying I'm sorry about everything, it's okay. No. You are still leaving an imprint on the ground. You are still leaving an imprint no matter where you are. And so, you would think, well, maybe the next prophet will be a little better. The next prophet, his name is Ezekiel. He comes along about this time. Now, God tells him to do something really weird. Look at the person beside you and say, really weird. He is supposed to get a bunch of beans. A whole bunch of beans. And he is to dig trenches and look like he's building strongholds and all this in this area. He's doing this right in the middle of town square. Right in the middle of town. And he is to take this bag of beans and he is to lay on one side. He has to lay on one side there in the town. Now here's the reason for the beans. It's not good. He can't get up and go eat. The process works like this. You eat beans. They are highly potent. When you relieve yourself, you can take what you've relieved and use it to burn to cook the next set of beans. He never leaves laying on his side. He lays there for hundreds of days. Then moves to the other side and does the same. And people walk by him every day. What is that idiot doing? And he's got written on a tablet what he's doing. So everybody who walks by can see that this is the prophecy of Ezekiel. That in the future, there is a country coming. And they will come and they will take away every stone. And they will come and they will take away everything we got. They're going to come and they're going to take us into slavery. They're going to take us into bondage. Our children are going to be eunuchs over there. In fact, if you go back and read that 2 Kings, that's where we get that Daniel and the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They weren't just men in Babylon. They were eunuchs. They weren't having any more children. You're talking about losing your thought of your future. What if you're a teenage boy and somebody turns you into a eunuch? And now you know you're going to live the rest of your life and the only decree on your life is you will serve the king until you're dead. That's your job. You won't have children and you won't have grandchildren and you're not going home. You're talking about getting discouraged. That could do it in a hurry. But this is how serious God was about teaching them and showing them and saying, listen, it's over. And Ezekiel laid there on his side for hundreds of days to show them. And he sat there and ate beans and showed and had the writing and said, guys, this is what's coming. They didn't like Ezekiel either. Eventually they kill Ezekiel. Now comes a young boy. Teenage boy. Just a young man. Starting to sprout up and God comes to Jeremiah and says, Jeremiah, I want you to be my prophet. Well, he's not crazy. He knows what's happened to all the other prophets. He's thinking, God, why me? And he says, God, I can't look at those men. Those are strong men. Those are hard people to talk to. And he says, Jeremiah, I want to make it simple. Whatever I show you, you just tell them. If I show it to you, you just tell them. And so Jeremiah does. Anybody ever read the book of Lamentations? Well, that was written while he got through in the sewage. Jeremiah prophesied, and they hated him so much, they lowered him into the sewage. And there up to his armpits, when you read that, you'll understand he's sitting there like this and crying out, God, I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't ask for this. Here I am. I'm past knee deep. I'm chest deep in it. I mean, this is bad. God, nobody will. I'm yelling up out of a hole in the ground trying to get somebody to hear your prophecies. This is where you've put me, God. I mean, that's lamentations. That's crying out. That's saying it don't get no worse than this. I'd have to die for things to get better. When they take him out, he's still prophesying. And in the middle of all of this, we get to chapter 32. And the world starts to change. It begins with someone who is holding on to what God has said. He's holding on to what God has determined is right. And he's trying to convince the world, guys, you can't live any other way. God is going to be God. The church in this modern time has the same problem. We are sitting here trying to tell people truth who just want to find a way to hide it. Because we have that mindset. Now, if nobody knows, then it doesn't count. It doesn't matter if it's presidential candidates that we find out later have been hiding women and having children with them, and they'll stand up in front of fowls and say, I don't know what you're talking about. We raise a generation that unless you can catch me, and even if you do, I'll deny it. It doesn't matter. If you can't prove it, then it doesn't count. And we've walked so far away from the symbolic action of life that somehow we think if we don't get caught in, nothing happens, then we won't have to pay a price, and there won't be any problems, and there won't be any situations. And we walk so far away from it, it's the way we do society, it's the way we do the world, it's the way... I mean, we talk about, just starting from the simplest thing of marriage. That's symbolic action, don't you understand? When you get married, basically what you do is you spend a lot of money or a little money. In my case, we spend a lot of money to all get dressed up, to stand in front of a preacher, in front of all our friends and family, just so I could look at Elise and tell her, I do. And she could look at me and say, I do. Now, it didn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. Oh, yeah, brother, it does. No, it don't, because I can carry up the circuit clerk up here and I'll show you. It don't mean anything. I mean, it's just a piece of paper, and you can get another piece of paper that says the old piece of paper don't mean anything. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, you can get divorced and you can just annul the whole thing and just decide we can't live together. But now, what we were doing was we were trying to do something symbolic and trying to say symbolically we are telling each other that for the rest of our lives, till death do us part, we will be faithful and connected to each other. That's what we're trying to do. But when you take a symbolic action and give it to people that don't believe in symbolic action, then all that's going to happen is they may go through the motions and they may spend the money, but their heart and their flesh won't allow them to connect the two parts. Because there's coming a day when whatever it is you've symbolically claimed will have to be tested. It'll have to be tested. I know I've been married, and now it's been so long. And that's a good thing because now we get those looks. You know, we walk in and they'll say, well, how long have y'all been married? Well, almost 20 years. Oh, man. Now you kind of get that look. It's like, how y'all make it that long? And I'm like, okay. But even in that, understand, it's not easy. And there's all the time I have to pull back on that symbolic action and I have to remind myself of all the commitments and all the things that I stood up and said, and I have to remind myself that the symbolic thing that I did is more powerful than what I feel right now. Alicia's closet is in our bathroom, and in her closet she keeps all the photos. She has the photo section. And right beside that is the toilet. And so what I do is put the lid down on the toilet, I sit down, and I pull those boxes out. When my kids have got on my nerves, and when my wife has got on my nerves, and when I have more than likely got on all of their nerves, and I'm thinking, God, maybe it'd just be easier just to quit. They'd probably be happier without me. And I pull out that box. And I start off from that wedding. And I see this little girl standing there with a white dress on. And it reminds me of us saying I do and her taking that handkerchief and wiping my tears, because I really should have cried a lot more. I had no idea how much I was going to be giving the rest of my life. She should have been bawling for all she had to marry into. I don't mean that bad. You take it like we try to make it like, oh, you should just say no. No, no. You put two different people in the same house together and tell them, you can't leave. It's not all the pretty you think. I grew up in a good home. I had two good parents, but I'm going to tell you something. There were some times you're just like, oh, just go away. So I sit there and I pull out that box and I remind myself, man, I committed to that lady. I go back through our honeymoon and I go back through our trips and I go back to when I'm holding the tailor for the first time and I walk out and show the family and I go back through all of those moments to remind myself symbolically of how I have made step after step. The jar is still closed. We hadn't got there yet. But I remind myself of what's in the jar. One day, me or her, we will get old. One of us will get sick. One or the other will have to stand by the other one's bed. And will have to let the other one go. Then someone can open the jar and they can say, man, what a life they built. They symbolically said they were going to have a life. They stood in front of everybody and said they were going to have a life. But it's not till today do we open the jar and we get to see what all of their life did. So much of our decisions are based on what I feel right now, or what I think right now, or what I can get away with right now, and we miss out on the symbolic stuff that lasts for a lifetime. And Jeremiah, while he's in prison, verses 1 through 5 describes this. But in those verses, he is talking about, all I've done is just tell you the truth. All I've done is tell you the truth. See, I would abolish divorce. I would say there can be no divorce. If you get married, if you're dumb enough to get married, you're going to stay together. That'd be the law of the land if I was in control. Why? And it wouldn't do anything about whether you liked each other. I could care less. We'd do it just for this one reason. That children who are raised with a father and a mother grow up 75% better. More secure. So I don't even care if you like each other. Y'all going to stick it out just to raise kids. But that's the truth. Now that's scientific. That's proven. Then why don't we do that? That ain't what I want. Even though it's probably right, it's not what I want. I don't want to destroy abortion and all this to just do it. Let's just look at the statistics. Ladies who have been through that will tell you they have almost a 70% higher rate of suicide. They have more mental illness when they're older. I want to tell you something. You take a life and you tell somebody to live with that the rest of their life. I want to tell you something. I don't care if you think it's cool or not. That's hard to live with for the rest of your life every time you walk into a Walmart and see a baby run across the floor and wonder what yours would have looked like. So I wouldn't abolish it because it's a woman's right or not. No, I'm going to abolish it because it's not going to help nobody. But we don't want to hear that. We don't want to hear that. See, truth is harder. There's things I have to do symbolically and I have to make stands in my life because they are lined up with truth. Whether I like it or not, I have to do it. And by doing it, it allows me to eventually get to an end that's going to be good. Guys, you've got to hear me. We serve a God that deals in symbols. Just like we come to the altar today. Well, Brother Lott, what did that do? Did that cure? It cured everything. Why? Because it released God to work on their behalf. Well, they may go home, it be worse. It may be. But I can tell you this much, if God's working on it, then you give God the time and it will be fixed. Let me wrap this up so you can get home and get something to eat. He spends most of the chapter explaining the reason why they're in this shape. Because they wouldn't listen. Because they don't like truth. But now go with me and let's read those two verses one more time. And as we do, I want you to see how God sees it. There's something happens symbolically that Jeremiah is supposed to do. Verses 6 begin something. And it's the purchasing in the middle of all this calamity. What would you do? I mean, if you knew your Babylon has showed up, they're fixing to haul everything away, everybody's fixing to go away, everybody's fixing to... What would you do? Let's put it down into reasonable thought. Your marriage is shambles. I mean, you don't talk anymore. Things are bad. Everything's going berserk. I mean, what do? You just give up? I mean, your kids won't listen to you anymore. You can't deal with your teenager. Everything's... What do? Send them to grandma's? My job, it's chaotic. I don't get paid enough. I mean, it's too much stress. I don't like the people I work with. What do? Quit your job? Get on unemployment till God finally brings that one you like? No. At moments in your life, and you listen to me very carefully. At moments in your life when the problems or the situations or the circumstances are at their greatest, this is where symbolism has the most power to react. What I do when I can't do any more determines my life. I like to sum it up this way. And I've preached this sermon before. The only thing that you really have in your life, and listen to me, the only thing you really have are the things that you can hold on to under pressure. Somebody will say, well, I'm a nice person. Let's put you under pressure. How come you always lose your cool, cuss, and get mad? Well, I can't help myself sometimes. No, no. You can't handle a good attitude under pressure. You don't possess a good attitude. It's just when there's no pressure, you can live a certain way. But put you under pressure, and all of a sudden, what comes squirting out is what you really can handle. And life is determined to bring you places where you will be under pressure. So if I say, you know what, I'm a good guy. Let's put you under pressure. Let's see how good you are. Oh, I love my wife. Man, I love my wife. Well, let's put you under pressure and see how... This would be a good statistic. I love statistics. You know when most men cheat on their wives? When they're pregnant. When they're pregnant. Because under the pressure, she don't want you. Let's be honest, guys. She ain't caring nothing about it. And now you're having to live several months without somebody wanting to hug on you and roll over on you. All she wants you to do is rub her feet and go get ice cream. That's the closest thing to heaven she gets. It's like, hey, baby, you want to fool around? No, but I sure... We want to ride uptown and get something to eat? I'm like, yeah, that was my next thought. And so guys see it then as, oh man, I'm a man. I gotta have somebody. And somebody smiles at him at Walmart, and somebody, you know, and they think, oh, there's what I need right there. And you ask them, they still love their wife. The problem is you put them under pressure. They're not as loving or committed or faithful as they say they are. You only can handle what you can hold under pressure. You don't possess anything else. And so in the middle of all of this calamity, what is Jeremiah going to do when he... Jeremiah's in prison. He's sitting in a jail cell. What do? You're in jail. The Babylonians are camped outside. They're fixing to take over the city. It'd be a lot of interest for me to just sit back and say, let's just see how this one plays out. But God speaks to Jeremiah at that time, and this is what he tells him, something crazy, just off the wall. He says, Jeremiah, your cousin's coming to visit you. And when he comes to visit you, he's going to ask you about buying some land. I want you to jump on that. I want you to buy that land. Huh? We're not even going to be living here in a few years. What good is land going to do me? Jeremiah, I want you to buy that land. And so his cousin comes. I don't know which one was more surprised, Jeremiah saying, I will buy it, or his cousin saying, you will? Because his cousin knows what's going on outside, and he says, look, I got some property, and it doesn't look like I'm going to get to use it. Would you be interested in buying it? And Jeremiah from the other end of the bar says, sure. Go get the lawyers. I can't exactly go down to the office. You're going to have to bring everybody here. But bring everybody down here. I'll sign whatever I need to sign. We'll stamp everything. We'll get it done. And I will buy land from you right in the middle of this calamity. I am going to go ahead and purchase my future. I like that. See, I don't like Valentine's Day. I don't like anybody telling me I have to be nice to somebody. Elise knows that. I'd much rather send her roses or flowers 2 weeks later. I'll send her something small, and then later I'll come back a month or 2 weeks or whatever, and I'll send her, I just want you to know I still feel the same today as I did 14 days ago. Which one do you think means the most to her? No, that's not a no-brainer. It's the symbolic action that you do. It's the things you do when nobody is making you that determines your life. So Jeremiah says, get the papers, I will sign it. And that's when we read the 14th verse. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel. Take this evidence of purchase, both which is sealed and which evidence which is open, and put them in the earthen vessel that they may continue what? Guys, we're going to open this. We're going to open this thing now eventually. It won't be today. It won't be next week. Put it in something good because it might be a few months. In fact, it'll be 79 years. But don't worry. God's made us a promise, verse 15. For thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, houses and fields and vineyards shall be possessed when? Again in this land. Don't worry about what you can see right now. See, when I was 16 years old, all I could see was I was alone. And God kept telling me, Tim, don't worry about what you can't see right now. I got that. You come after me. At 17, Tim, God, I ain't found nothing. Trust me. At 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, around that time, I was best man in other friends' weddings. That's the only thing worse when you're not moving into that season and everybody else is. You're losing friends. Because now the guys you used to hang out with and go, that ain't going to happen no more. Now you're even more alone. And you're saying, God, come on now. I even met some few girls I could have lived with. Now that's, let me just explain that. Let me explain that. Because I teach this to my kids and I'll teach it to you. You never marry the person you can live with the rest of your life. Never marry or date anybody you can live with the rest of your life. If you say to yourself, I can see myself living with it. I can see that. Don't even waste your time. You only marry the person you cannot live without. That's the only person you ever get serious with. And at 23, I'd met a bunch of them. They played the piano a little bit, and I think I can live. I mean, they're not perfect, but I can handle it. Hang on, Tim. Hang on. 24. Finally, at 24 years old, Elise comes back into my life. Didn't take me long to fix that problem. I had found somebody I could not the thought of her dating someone else just enraged me. Could not live without her. God said, now. You got to believe when you trust God with a part of your life or something you're holding on to, that God is making a promise over it that houses and land and vineyards and good is going to come back. You just hold on. God has already promised, no good thing will I withhold from you. I'm going to sum it up like this. I'm through. Look at the first slide. I said, thank the Lord. Told you wouldn't like this one. Nobody likes the truth. Nobody. If I just preach God loves you, man, God just wanting to bless you. God just, boy, y'all all be all excited. That's it. We're going to have such a great week. But if I walk you out of here and say, whatever decisions you make next week, it's going to determine your life. Well, I don't want to hear that. I want to be able to do what I want to do and not have to worry about that. That's God's part, right? Fix all my bad mistakes. No. You make decisions. My dad used to say it to me this way when I was going through all those phases of life. He said, Tim, look at it this way. He said, it's like an ear of corn. He said, you like corn? I said, I like corn. He said, all right, you got an ear of corn. Here's your choice, Tim. It's dinner time. You can eat this corn, Tim. Eat it. And you will be full till supper time. He said, or look at it. There's probably 100 kernels on that one ear of corn. If you set that thing up, let it dry, take the kernels off of it, plant each and every one of them. And it's going to take some time, Tim. It will not happen overnight. It takes a season to get here. You may have to nibble on some other stuff, but you like corn, don't you? I love corn. Well, it may be a while before you really get to eat corn. But you take every one of those kernels, and let's just say every one of them, Tim, puts off 10 stalks. Puts off 10 ears. What's 10 times 100, Tim? How much is that? How much? 1,000? Can you sit down and eat 1,000 ears of corn at one time? I can't either. I can't either. But God does math that way. He says, Tim, if you won't eat it now, if you'll plant it, if you'll sow it in me. And I don't care if right now, young person, if it's your mind, if you'll sow your mind and make good grades instead of just getting by and make the best out of your mind, God's going to open doors that you normally wouldn't get open. If you'll sow your bodies and give them to God and say, you know what, they're not toys, they're not for somebody else to play with, they're God-given, and one day I will step up and I will give that to somebody who I will spend the rest of my life with. What's going to happen is you don't get to eat corn right now. But one day there's coming a day when you got so much corn that you can give some to somebody else, you can do whatever you want to, eat all the corn you want, and then still have some more to plant. Remember I told you I sit there and I pull out that box? That box is not a little bitty box. In fact, that box doesn't hold all our pictures. I have a dresser right there in the middle of the living room that holds more of them. And then we got storage in the attic that holds more of them. And if I had time, which I don't, I could look through every one of those pictures and I could count the years and I could count. Do you know what? I have more blessings now than I have time to enjoy them all. All because 4 miles down the road there was a young lady who was designed, prepared, and made for me. But I could have either eat the corn then or planted and waited for a harvest that I could not consume for a lifetime. It goes that way with your life. The reason I'm a pastor today is because of what I sowed when I was younger. The reason I am where I'm at in all my life is because of what I was willing to sow. Guys, whether it's your marriage, whether it's your job, whether it's school, no matter what it is, you will achieve what you're willing not to eat up now and are willing to let God grow it into something bigger later. I know that ain't going to make you jump. He probably won't shout. But take it from somebody who's seen it from both sides. You're going to enjoy your harvest a lot more than you are nibbling on one ear of corn and then sucking on a husk for the rest of your life. You're going to enjoy it a lot more than burning through it now and wishing a lifetime later you had enjoyed it. Will you bow your heads?